So it would be very easy for new dads to feel quite useless, let's be honest, in the first few weeks when the mum is doing the heavy lifting. So what can you actually do to support mum and baby and keep everyone happy? Well, let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the Let Me Explain podcast. And you mightn't have known it, and thanks to my colleague Cameron Hill for stepping in last week to cover the podcast. But the ones we've been doing over the last few weeks have all been pre-recorded because I have been on quite a long paternity leave, thankfully. Our little baby, George, arrived at the end of January. So our lives have just been completely flipped upside down. And everything I probably said in those podcasts now, I would go back and say, total rubbish, didn't work for me at all. No, I'm joking. He's been a dream so far. But one of the people who helped us early on, who we met in the hospital and who we had planned, ironically, to have on the podcast before George was born, and we're now finally getting to chat to, is Anne-Marie Sliney, Director of Midwifery Nursing at Hollis Street. And Anne-Marie, I just want to start by actually, because I don't know if people get the love enough, everybody in Hollis Street, we could not praise them high enough. Everyone we encountered, from people on the door to porters to nurses to up to consultants, like, we had an absolute dream experience, and fair play and hats off to you and all of your staff.
Well, that was really lovely to hear, because it's really nice when we get a compliment coming in. You know, everyone here, really what we want is for people coming into us who entrust us with their care to have the very best experience that they and their baby can have, because it's different every time. It's different for every person. It's different every time every person does it. So what we're looking for all the time is to try and help people to achieve whatever that they're looking for, but ultimately for everybody to leave as with a healthy baby and a healthy mom.
And it must be quite difficult, because like we had a great experience. Like I said, we had because we were in a few different wards at different points, the antenatal ward and then postnatal. We had nurses from the first ward coming to check on us after George was born and saying, "Oh, how did you get on? Are you all right? Do you need anything?" All this, and even down to the food. I mean, Jill is vegan, and hospital food, particularly when it comes to vegans, is pretty terrible. She had a great time. She didn't want to leave the meals. She was rejecting my cooking at the end of it. So genuinely hats off to everybody.
And we do have a fabulous catering team, and they do an amazing job keeping all of the women, all of our patients well fed, and all of our staff as well, who are here for 12, 13 hour shifts, sometimes longer. So it's great to know that everybody's well fed. But I'm not at all surprised to hear you say that the midwives were coming between wards to check on you. You know, when someone comes into the antenatal ward and spends a bit of time there, you become very invested in the beginning of their journey, you know, and then you're really interested to find out how they've gotten on, and you hear, oh, they've had the baby, or this happened or that happened. It's always nice to pop back in and say hello and well done, and gosh, isn't that a lovely baby? And yeah, it's really, really nice. You form a relationship very quickly when you're a midwife, because you have to. You have to hope that that woman's going to trust you with her care and with her babies. And so you do become very invested, and you really are very excited to hear the outcome, you know, because it's just so lovely.
Yeah, it is. And it was a really kind of homely, felt like a bit like a family experience. It was great. It couldn't fault people. But I presume you do, like, and it's funny walking the halls when you're running to get something from the car, or you're going down to get a coffee or whatever, and you pass the other dads in the hospital, and very different faces on very different people. I'd say you get a full spectrum of emotion, from oh my God, what is happening, to the people who are cool, calm and collected. I assume some of those actually exist.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get everything. You'll get people who are cool, calm and collected who absolutely shouldn't be, who should be a little bit more, you know, in it and invested and a little bit more ready to go. And then you'll have others who are very, very anxious when actually everything is going very well. And that just comes down to us as people. We're all so different, you know, and we all deal with things differently. And when we meet people coming into the hospital, we don't always know your entire background, and perhaps something frightening happened that has you very anxious, or perhaps your other pregnancies and deliveries went so well and now all of a sudden something frightening is happening. You know, it's very variable, and we all bring a lot of history and baggage with us to every new experience. You know, and even if you've had 3-4 babies before, you don't know what's going to happen when you come in for the next one. So we have the full spectrum of people who've had years and years of IVF to have their baby. We have people who didn't plan to have their baby. We have first timers. We have fourth and fifth timers. You know, we have twins and multiples. We have ones who are coming into us with knowing that there's going to be a problem either with mum or with baby or perhaps with both. So you get the full spectrum of everything here. So you're seeing these dads walking around the place all the time. You don't know what their situation is. It's so different, you know, for someone coming in, first baby, everything goes really well, and he's coming in with a car seat to take them home, to the dad who's coming in to visit his 24-week baby in NICU, who's now 6 weeks old and have had a difficult start in life. So, you know, our approach is very much dependent on the situation you're finding yourself in, because it's so different for everybody.
That must be kind of a hard thing to gauge as well when you first meet people, because I'm sure there are people who will want all the reassurance and all the support, and they want to know everything that's being done and every drug they're getting and everything. And the people who are just almost overwhelmed, I suppose, and don't really know what they want.
Yeah. And what, you know, the very best thing that people can do before they come in is to prepare themselves as much as they can. So it's like I would say to people when I did antenatal classes in the past, you wouldn't sign up to do a marathon today and run it on Sunday, because your body wouldn't be able for it and your mind wouldn't be able for it. It's the same with pregnancy. Once you decide that you're going to have a baby or you find yourself pregnant, there's prep to do. You know, you've got to get yourself in the zone. You've got to figure out what are your priorities. What is it that you want to achieve? How are you going to know that things are going well? And how are you going to prepare for labor when labor comes? Because you need to do a little bit of work so that you're, you know, emotionally and physically ready for it. Whatever way it's going to be, whether it's going to be an elective section or whether you're going to have a spontaneous or an induced labor. Preparation is definitely key.
So that's where step one is, be prepared. And I remember running into a few of the dads I met at the antenatal classes, and sort of, now no one stopped to talk. We were all rushing around getting whatever it was for our respective partners. But there was still a knowing nod, as in like, oh yeah, best of luck, you know, all that sort of stuff. Hope everything's going well. But let's maybe start with, because we want to give advice to new dads and people who may be wondering or are expecting a baby and thinking, how am I going to be involved? How am I going to help in the early days? Let's start with delivery. And I would imagine you have seen everything from the, you know, the people who are reciting nearly poetry or affirmations to people and had their cards out, right up to the fainters.
Absolutely. And everything in between, you know, and again, the same thing, it's going to be the same all the time. It's be prepared. So figure out, what are you like? Are you a fainter? If you are a fainter, tell the midwife, because it's really beneficial for her to know, so she can point your eyes in a different direction at certain times, or simply make sure there's a chair behind you, so that if you are feeling a bit dizzy, you're sitting down rather than falling down, hitting your head and having to go to an adult hospital to have a head scan when your wife or partner is still in labor. So there's things like that. Then it would be, if it's quite warm in the hospital, don't come in 20 layers of clothing and then feel extra hot and extra faint. Come in if it's for a labor situation rather than a cesarean section, come in expecting to be here for the day or the night or both. So, you know, perhaps have snacks, because during the night, there, you know, the canteen is closed, the coffee shop is closed. And now, you know, you will get tea and coffee, slice of toast. But if you want something a bit more substantial, that would be a good idea. Wear comfortable clothes, wear light clothes. If your partner's having an active labor, you're going to be walking around the room after her or standing with the shower on her back or whatever it might be to help her massage, whatever it is. So you need to be able to do that. So often, you know, a tracksuit or something reasonable that you're comfortable walking around in. And have your phone charged. That's the other thing, you know, because you're going to want to be telling people when the baby's born, or you might want to play music in the room, or where your phone, you'll need to use the parking app if you've brought your car, and you're going to be topping up your parking, because around here it's pay and display by the hour, and clampers will clamp, as is their job. So my advice would be, leave the car at home if you possibly can, but if you do have to drive in, make sure you've got the app on your phone. These are all just small little things that make life an awful lot easier when you get here, you know, and they just mean that you're not distracted, you're not having to run out with coins to top up the meter, or you know, if you fancy a little snack, you've got something in the bag. You know, the other thing I would say is don't bring lots and lots and lots of things in with you. Bring what you need. But, you know, you don't need 20 pillows, and you don't need all of the other bits that you see people coming in with, because they're invariably just going to have to carry all of that back off later when you're bringing the baby home, and you've also got the baby and the changing bag and the car seat and all of those other things. So just try and be sensible about your approach to it. You're looking at least a 12-hour day in the labor ward, usually for most first-time mums. And it's just be practical about what you feel will make your life a little bit easier. Your partner will have sorted out her bag. She'll have her things. She'll have the thing for the baby. So if you make sure that you're sorted, then you can just blend in with whatever it is she feels she needs at the time.
Mm. Do you find people, there's a lot of talk beforehand of making your birth plan and, you know, giving that to the midwives and all the business. Does that kind of go out the window for most couples, though, when the rubber hits the road?
Not necessarily. I would say to most people, if it's very, some people will think, I'm going to come in and I'm going to talk to my midwife and together we'll plan what's going to happen. First, and that's absolutely fine. And some people have things that are really very important to them. And what they want is to make sure that the people caring for them are aware of those choices and can facilitate them as much as possible. What I would say to anyone considering a birth plan is write it well in advance of labor and bring it to one of your antenatal appointments where you're not having any contractions, everything is nice and calm, and you can discuss it with the midwife at your visit. And that means then that between you, you know what you want. Then that's filed into your chart so that whichever midwife you meet when you come into the labor ward has a copy of it and can discuss it with you then as well. But it's really hard for the first time to discuss your birth plan if you're contracting every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's better to have that done in advance. And sometimes when you have a birth plan, everything that you've written on it happens just perfect. Mm. And sometimes it's a little bit of, you know, negotiation because the baby's not quite happy. Or actually, you've decided that you want an epidural and that's what's going to happen, but you come in and your baby's delivering. Or the other way around, you don't want an epidural, but you change your mind on the day and you decide that you will. And that's fine. This is not... it's not legally binding. If you know what I mean, you can change your mind as you want to change your mind when you're in labor, and your midwife is there to look after you the whole time. And together you can decide what you want to happen.
Mm. What about C-sections then? Because I remember talking to one of the staff members who said that the numbers have rocketed, that 40-50% of the babies that they saw are now sections, which seems a big jump.
Cesarean section numbers are rising all the time worldwide, and that's for various different reasons. We have more women, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, we have more women having cesareans, which makes them a higher risk the next time round of requiring one. So if you've had one, you can successfully, spontaneously labour and have your baby. But if you've had two or more, the recommendation would be to have sections if you have any more children after that. And we also have women coming to pregnancy older in life, which makes them in a higher risk category. We have more multiples. We have more women with coexisting medical conditions who perhaps in the past might not have achieved pregnancy and now do, and for various reasons will require. We also have more women requesting sections. So we have patient requests would be a reason as well. So there's lots of different reasons for more sections, and there are more, and we're not an outlier. You know, we look at our worldwide figures, we fit right in. But yeah, there are definitely more happening.
Mm. And I suppose some other people who've had sections, and elective sections in particular, I know it's quite different from, say, an emergency one that maybe the labour doesn't go as planned. And that could be, I imagine, quite a stressful experience. But I've heard Dad say to me that when it comes to an elective one, it was actually quite a relaxed experience, that everyone knew what they were doing. There was a plan, there was a time, and they were sort of brought in after mum was already sedated. And it was a very quick process, really, after that.
Yeah, so in the event of an elective section, you're given your date, you come in, you're admitted to the hospital, and then you go to theatre as the theatre is free. So we would have a list, but obviously we have a live labour ward all the time. So emergencies will always take priority over the elective. And then when you go to the theatre, mum will go into theatre, have her anaesthetic consult, have her spinal anaesthetic. Usually almost all cesarean sections are carried out under spinal. Once the spinal is effective and we know that everything is stable, then birth partner will come in, and within a few minutes the baby is delivered. Mm. So it is all very calm, and everyone has a place and everyone knows what they're doing. I think it's probably important to point out, in the emergency situation, all of the staff know exactly what they're doing and they are usually calm, but for the parents it can be quite a frightening experience. And the term emergency section is applied to anything that wasn't planned for that day. So for example, you could come in and be in labor with an epidural, all very calm, all very relaxed, but you're not progressing and you need a section. That's an emergency, still remains very calm. Yeah. Or you can have a situation where baby's heart rate has dropped, or there's a bleed, or there's another reason that requires us to move quicker. So, you know, there's a big difference in what we class as emergencies. So they're graded differently.
Yeah. And what is, I suppose, a very stressful experience maybe for the parents is something you guys see every day, which is, you know, it's sort of different. You have to trust that you're in good hands, which you are. Let's talk then about after baby is out. And I was very lucky. I had 5 weeks of paternity leave. I'm just coming off it now. And I'm finding that difficult enough after 5 weeks. I don't know how I could have gone back after two, which unfortunately is what a lot of dads have to do, either for financial reasons or just because they only get 2 weeks, which is something else that we talked about with the Labour TD Kieran Ahern, if people want to listen back to that particular episode, who got no paternity leave on his, no entitlement to paternity leave on his second child as a TD, although he did manage to take some. When it comes to those early days, and particularly if mam is breastfeeding, I suppose, there's only so much you could feel like you can do at times where baby is fussing, you've changed them, you've burped them or whatever, and it's just that feed that will do it. It can be quite easy, I suppose, for dads to feel, oh, am I doing all that much here? So what is the important thing for them to remember in those early days? And also just provide, particularly if, say, you're gone back to work, you're in the office 5 days a week, you feel maybe not disconnected, but like you're not able to help in the way you'd like to.
I think that there's so much practical support that can be given in those first few weeks. You know, any amount of paternity leave that you can get is great, but the reality for a lot of people is that they can't afford to take paternity leave, even if it's on offer. But if you get any time at home, we come back to the first point of preparation. So beforehand, if you can have done a bit of batch cooking and things. So in the day that you're, and it sounds crazy, you'll get it now because you're 5 weeks in, but the days that you haven't got time to have a shower, you physically can't actually have time to do that because things are so hectic and there's washing all over the place and the house is upside down and the dog is barking and all the usual things and the baby vomited over every baby bro and you've got nothing left to put them in.
We've done already, like, yeah, it's just the washing.
You'll be so delighted that you have a casserole in the freezer or, you know, a curry, you know, because what you want to do is to be well nourished. So back to the basics. It's, you know, be ready beforehand. Have as much as you think you need in. And if people are willing to help, if you have willing grandparents or aunts and uncles or friends who are happy to pop in and do a bit of ironing or, you know, clean the bathroom, let them do it. You know, you will do it for your friends now that you've been through this experience. Or people, you know, well-meaning friends will drop off a food parcel at the front door, but not come in.
Yeah.
You know, they'll say, I'm going to call by at 12. They'll ring the doorbell, say hello, and they'll leave. And then you have dinner for 2 days. So they're really practical things. And then for dads who are there for those first, or partners for those first few weeks, you know, it's things like if mum is, irrespective of how she's feeding, actually, it's to support her to do that. So, you know, it's that her time is taken with looking after this baby and feeding this baby. You can do the changing, you can do the bathing, you can do the dressing, you can do winding. You can rock the baby to sleep. If she's been awake for 2 hours in the nighttime or 3 hours in the nighttime, then when she does that early morning feed, you can take the baby downstairs. Even if the baby is just asleep with you downstairs, she gets a better sleep because she's not one ear open the whole time, you know, is everything okay? Because she knows babies with you, so she gets that really good couple of hours. So it's just practical. And it seems like the baby wants to be held. You know, that time where there's nothing wrong. He's not hungry. He doesn't have a dirty nappy. He's not cold, but he still wants to be held. Mm-hmm. So you hold the baby and she has a shower. And that is so valuable. And it means that everything is better because you've had the shower. You know, and so it's practical things. It's small little things. The other really good thing, and often relatives might be a bit put out, but it's kind of to be the gatekeeper, not to let everybody into the house all the time. You do need a little bit of time for just you and the baby, you know, because everybody's so excited to see the baby and they're so excited to see you and they're all looking to get a smile and hold a hand and do everything that they want to do. But actually what you need to do is just have time to get to know each other. You've changed. You walk into the hospital if it's your first baby as a couple, and you leave with a whole other person, and you've got to get used to what that feels like for you. And, you know, that thinking about, you know, you can't just get up and have a shower and leave the house, you know, and then when you do go back to work, you do have to get up and have a shower, even if you've been up 3 times in the middle of the night. And that's a bit of a land as well. When you're used to just looking after yourself and you've had a bad night, baby's not been happy. You've been up half of it. You felt like asleep at 5 and then you're up at 7 to go to work and you can't believe you have to go to work. Mm-hmm. But that's the reality of early parenthood. And it does get easier and babies settle and you get used to what you're supposed to be doing. But it's about being easy on yourself, being kind to each other and taking all of the help that people are asking. Because in the beginning, you will get lots of offers of help. But if you keep saying no, people will think, well, sure, they're fine, they don't need any help. Mm-hmm. When actually, take it. Because everybody loves the baby and everybody wants to help. So let them help.
And good advice. Lean on your support network if you have it. Absolutely. You're lucky enough to.
And if you're not, you find your community support. There's breastfeeding groups. Mm-hmm. We have our postnatal hubs now where you can pop along to a local health center. And our midwives here will go out to those hubs for up to 6 weeks after your baby's born. You can pop in there. Right. And you can get one-to-one support whenever you feel you need it. So there are lots of supports in the community. So if you haven't got a lot of family around you or a big group of friends, there are plenty of ways that you can access support.
That's great to know. A lot of good advice there, Anne-Marie. The only, I'm trying to think, is there anything else I need to throw in? You need more bibs than you think, I suppose, is the only bit of a term.
Absolutely.
Like, 5 trips to Next and they've, people have gifted them and we're still running through them like I don't know what.
Go out every morning with a bag of dry bibs and come back every evening with a bag of dirty ones that need washing.
Plan for the washing to take longer than you think. And I didn't ever think about this, but you're hanging out like 100 small things instead of 20 big things. It just takes forever.
It does, and you just have them dressed and then they poo or vomit all over everything and you have to change it again.
Oh, they're the worst ones. Like, George is a devil for that, is that, you're up at 4 a.m, you're barely awake, you change the nappy, you get them redressed, and then you hear poo time. And it's like, right, here we go. Nappy number 2, let's do it. As long as he doesn't get it on himself or the clothes, that's the worst bit nearly, is the wee actually.
Or the bed, the bed gets destroyed.
But it's all part of the fun of it as well. Someone described it to me as the hardest thing you'll ever love doing. And I just think that sums it up really nicely.
It is, it's pure magic, and the thing really is to try and enjoy it. And everybody says it to you. I have twin girls now who are almost 15. And, everybody said it to me, it goes so quickly, take so many photos. They will be big before you know it. And they are now taller than me. So, do take lots of photos with Teddy or something beside them so you can see how small they were. Because you will take out a baby bro in 2 years' time and think he never fit into that. Yeah. And then you'll photograph where it was too big on him. So enjoy it, because it is so special, to be lucky enough to have a healthy baby and to be able to enjoy it. It's just lovely.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to just try and make the most of it.
I know. I'm already getting sad at the baby grows that don't fit him anymore. That did just about fit him on day one when he was out. Those newborn sizes can be deceptive. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for chatting to us. And thanks again to you and all your team in Hollistry. We had a wonderful experience and I know you're doing wonderful work every day. So listen, thanks so much. Some great advice for new dads there. And no doubt we'll talk to you again in the podcast in the future.
Thank you so much, Sean. Take care.
That's it for this episode. We'll be back next week with another one. My thanks again to Cameron Hill, who was in. He's got a couple of episodes planned, actually, where he's going to step in at various points in the podcast, including one about Katie Taylor last week. Well worth a listen. And we're probably going to be hearing a bit more about from our reporter, Jamie O'Hara, who is in Washington next week, where the Taoiseach is due to meet Donald Trump to be a fly on the wall for their private conversation. That will be particularly interesting. Don't forget to subscribe and follow the podcast. And I'll chat to you next week.